on.
Thank you so very much for coming today.
Go back and forth, and, you know, kind of how did it happen?
If I could have your attention, please.
Steve, one of the methods.
Hello, my name is Lisa Falsko. I'm CEO of the Alaska World Affairs Council. And it is such a pleasure to see everyone here today. Can you hear me in the backs and on the sides? Principal Murphy, can you hear me all the way on the side back there on the left? The sound volume okay? Can you hear me all the way on the left?
I never would have.
I think if we could turn up just a tad more, that'd be great. Well, I'm glad to see so many people here. Now I hear nothing. Hello, testing, testing. There we go. Okay. So it's great to see everyone here today. We started our program season in September. You might have noticed a lot of new things on our schedule. Please visit our website at alaskaworldaffairs.org for more upcoming programs. We also have some flyers at the front. You can see some of the things we're doing. Our Global Health Series is coming up next with Jay Butler. We also have another popular movie with a panel discussion happening at Alaska Public Media. And for any trivia buffs out here, we have a trivia contest coming up. I'll talk a little bit more about that. If you could please take a moment to turn off your cell phones. This program is being recorded for the radio, so we do love your ringtones. However, if you wouldn't mind just turning them off, the audio and radio listeners at home would appreciate that. I'd like to thank Kari Gardy over there in the corner recording our program for KSKA. This program will be available. You can download it. We will have a link on our website. You can also go to alaskapublic.org to hear this program, as well as all of our past programs for the Alaska World Affairs Council. I'd also like to thank Riley Leonard, if he is around here. Maybe he can stand. The slideshow you saw here was thanks to a student graduated from UA Southeast, Riley Leonard, who spent 40 hours digging through microfiche and speaking to Gunnar Knapp and a bunch of different people, finding out who was on that original flight and looking through photos. Actually, I believe they were slides at that time. Had a great time and came up with a lot of great information. So I'd like to thank Riley for all of his hard work. And I'd like to let everyone know about an upcoming trivia contest. I see a lot of students in the room here. We have an annual World Quest trivia competition, and the winning team of four gets to go to Washington, D.C. and compete on the national level, all expenses paid, thanks to everyone else here in the room. So if you're a student, please go on our website to find out more information about this student competition and hopefully win that trip for four students and their chaperone to Washington, D.C. And if you're not a student, please consider helping sponsor this program. And if you're a trivia buff and you're over 21, on January 16th, we're going to be at the Taproot, and we're going to be doing a little bit of a trivia contest ourselves and raising some money for the students. There's going to be fun questions like economics, current events, paparazzi, drinks, food, things like that. So please consider joining us, and we have more information on our website. We are a membership organization, so if you're currently not a member, our season has, like I said, just started, so please consider becoming a member, and we have some information at the front. If you are brand new to the World Affairs Council, this is your very first program, would you mind raising your hand? Do we have any brand new faces? Ah, look at that. Wonderful. Super. Well, I'm so glad all of you came. And if you like this program, like I said, our next one is on the 22nd. It's our healthcare in that series, so please consider coming back again. I also noticed a lot of students as I was walking in. If you're a student, would you mind standing and being recognized? We have students today from Chugiak, Bartlett, Service High School, Wonder Park, UAA. People studying, I saw some Russian students studying Russian and history and political science. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming out here. And I'd like to thank BP for sponsoring our student program. BP allows students to come to all of our programs at no cost. And so we'd like to thank them very much for this. And speaking of partners, one more thing. I'd like to thank Alaska Common Ground for partnering with us on this program and getting the word out. And on that, I'd like to bring up Chuck Colson, the chairman of our board, who's going to come to the podium and introduce our speakers.
Y-
You know, we have a lot of different varieties of programming. Sometimes the programming looks like and feels like a college lecture. Sometimes it looks like a public policy debate. This one kind of feels like a class reunion. Just for a show of hands, could I see people, a show of hands of people who were actually on the Friendship flight? Quite a few. Well, mark these people out. After we're done, I'm sure they'd be willing to answer questions about it that you might have. As Lisa said, I'm Chuck Colson. I'm the chair of the Alaska World Affairs Council, and it's my pleasure today to introduce our panel discussions and speakers. Former Governor Steve Cooper, Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell, and author Willie Hensley. Mead Treadwell was elected as Alaska's Lieutenant Governor in November of 2010. He's a graduate of Yale University and the Harvard Business School. Mead brings a very long record of private and public sector service to his job as Lieutenant Governor. And if I went through everybody's full bio up here, we wouldn't have much time for the session, so I had to abbreviate this a bit. Lieutenant Governor Treadwell is recognized as one of the world's Arctic policy experts. He was appointed to the United States Arctic Research Commission by President George Bush in 2001. And designated by the President as the Commission's chair in 2006. Under his leadership, a new United States Arctic policy was developed and was adopted by President Bush, is now being implemented by our current administration. Lieutenant Governor was a passenger on the Freedom Flight. Former Governor Steve Cooper, in 1986, Steve Cooper was elected as the sixth governor of Alaska. He managed through the 1989 Exxon Valdez oil spill crisis, and played a major role in opening the Soviet, now Russian, Far East for international trade. For his administration's active role in reviving the Alaska economy and creating a surplus in the state budgets, Cooper was named one of America's top 10 governors by the publisher of USA Today. Steve began his professional career as a maritime attorney in Norfolk, Virginia, but soon moved to Fairbanks, Alaska, where he was a district attorney, then a private practice with Cooper and Madsen. He served in the Alaska House of Representatives from 1975 to 78 and was chairman of the House Finance Committee and chairman of the Alaska Lands Committee in 1977 and 1978. Steve was one of the Alaska representatives to the Law of the Sea Conference and also served as chairman of the Alaska Permanent Fund. Since 1991, former Governor Cooper has been CEO of Steve Cooper and Associates of Anchorage, Alaska, and Austin, Texas, a group which advises companies and governments on any energy-related initiatives. As I mentioned, Governor Cooper was governor of Alaska at the time of the Freedom Flight and was its official leader. Finally, Willie Hensley is the author of 50 Miles from Tomorrow, a memoir of Alaska and the real people. Willie was the founder of the Nana Regional Corporation and served as a director for 20 years and concluded his career there as president. While at Nana, he directed its involvement oil field services area, most specifically in the environmental services and in drilling ventures. He was a founder of Manilac. Did I pronounce that right?
Close.
The regional nonprofit representing the tribes in the Kotzebue region, and was involved in the formation of the Alaska Federation of Natives and served as its executive director, president, and co-chairman. Willie was elected to the Alaska State House of Representatives, where he served 4 years and was elected to the Senate for a four-year term. He was appointed by Governor Cooper to the Senate again in 1987. Willie also served as the chairman of the Capital Site Selection Committee under Governor Jay Hammond, chairman of the Land Claims Task Force under Governor Hickel. Willie is a visiting distinguished professor at the University of Alaska Anchorage, College of Business and Public Policy, where he is teaching Alaska policy frontiers. Mr. Hensley was a member of the Alaska State Legislature at the time of the flight, and I understand that you came back with two pairs of sealskin boots.
Reindeer,
sorry.
Bad information.
They are all here to speak to us today about, on a topic, I Can See Russia From Here, a celebration of the Friendship Flight and 25 years of an open border between two superpowers. I guess, Mead, I'll turn it over to you.
Great.
Great. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you for being here to help celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Friendship flight from Nome to Providencia, which began a series of exchanges under Governor Steve Cooper, where his counterpart, the then Governor Magadan, brought back an airplane full of people and goods that filled the Egan Convention Center for a week, it seemed, in terms of people buying furs and wooden toys and tablecloths and so forth. But it's also wonderful to welcome my friend Willie Hensley here also to speak, who is part of this and had also been a pioneer in helping to break down that ice curtain between us and the Russians. I chair the Alaska Historical Commission as Lieutenant Governor, and the Historical Commission has looked at a number of the important anniversaries that we're celebrating in the short few years to come. We're at a time where we're around the 25th anniversary of the end of the Cold War, and the Cold War had lots to do with what has happened in Alaska in our lifetimes, and so we're going to be looking at that, and this is one of the first kickoff events in that era, and I'm glad that we could do this here with the World Affairs Council. We saw an opportunity to celebrate this year because the Friendship flight really had lots of significance. First off, the opening of our border between Alaska and Russia began with the exchange of these flights between Nome and Providencia. They were a significant milestone in the end of the Cold War. Just before that, a swimmer between the Diomedes had been mentioned in a toast at the White House between Reagan and Gorbachev. And our proximity, rather than being a national joke on Saturday Night Live, actually became kind of a card to play to help end the standoff between the United States and the Soviet Union. Opening of the ice curtain here came over a year before the breach in the Berlin Wall, and Alaskans helped make that happen. And we can be proud of hastening the end of a nuclear standoff that at best threatened misery and death to millions of people, or at worst could have ended human history altogether. A second reason to celebrate this is the opening of cordial relations in the Arctic region has been a catalyst for significant circumpolar cooperation. And the flights helped create a neighborhood in the north that has come together none too soon with the ice retreat of the last decade and the access to the Arctic that retreat creates. And third and most important in my mind is the people-to-people relations, the Alaska and Siberian Yupik families who were united. And that was one of the most amazing things about being on that flight that day. There have been many new families created with Russian and American parents. Children have been raised here or on the other side of the border. And the ripple effect is enormous. We, at our university, for many years, we were the largest, and we had the largest number of Russian students studying in the United States here in Anchorage, Alaska. You can see diplomatic triumphs we've had afterwards, including saving whaling. When our whaling was attacked at the International Whaling Commission, we and the Russians were able to get together. The park program, the Beringia Park Program, the National Park Service has done a great thing to help keep that border open and help build cultural relations. There's been tourism, resource development, and the list goes on and on. So by celebrating these friendship flights, we celebrate the people who made it happen. So let me just ask you again, for those of you who were on the flight, please stand up if you can. And I say if you can, because I'm not sure I always can. So I see John Van Zyl. John, you provided some artwork on a first day cover that went. Chet Walukowicz, you helped put together that program. Gunnar Knapp was involved in the early planning of this and worked very closely with the governor's office to make it happen. I do want to also recognize that we have here today Ermalee Hickel, Alaska's former First Lady. Ermalee, I had been to Russia with you in 1981, and Wally, your late husband, went on the Friendship flight, and then when he was governor, he did the first circumpolar flight from Alaska, which he all of a sudden couldn't do because of a special session of the legislature, and you led that for us in Alaska. So let's have a round of applause for Ermalee. It was fun. And the best, glad to get back. And I think the best set of columns that Mike Dugan ever wrote about the Hickel administration were about your leadership of that flight. So thank you for that. There are others who wanted to be here but couldn't be here today. Dixie Belcher, who was head of Alaska Performing Artists for Peace, who had led some delegations of Alaska students to sing in Moscow, had formed a close friendship with Gorbachev's chief spokesman, a guy named Gennady Gerasimov. And I remember some meetings we had, one of which may have been in this room, which led up to the Russians agreeing to welcome this flight. And Dixie wanted to be here but couldn't. Jenna Brelsford, who worked with Governor Cooper, is in Seattle. She was actually somebody who married a Russian and has three children that were born of the opening of this border. David Ramser and others have contributed to this newspaper insert that is on your tables. Ken Wells didn't make the flight, but he stayed in touch as the Wall Street Journal reporter who kind of took Jim Stemple and made him famous to the point where people couldn't ignore his many hundreds of faxes that seemed to be coming regularly to push forward with this idea. And the one Russian diplomat who came here, violated our speeding laws, and clean out our pharmacies was a guy named Kirill Kasatkin, many of you may remember. And Kirill has not shown up yet in any of the diplomatic relations. But at any rate, some of the great reflections of this friendship flight are here in this newspaper insert. And I'd like to thank Barbara Propes on my staff, Michelle Tuohy, for helping to put this together. And I hope we will also be able to post this on the Historical Commission website. So that people listening online can see that. Now, what I'd like to do is have a short conversation and turn this panel over to Steve Cooper and Willie Hensley and see if we can answer three questions today. I guess question number one is, what did we do and is this significant? Why did we do it? And perhaps a more important question is, where should we go from here with Alaska-Russia relations? So, Steve, I'm going to ask you, Governor, thank you very much for coming back to be on this panel. It's an honor to be with you today.
All right. Whatever you say.
Well, you know, every now and then, circumstances that are beyond your control kind of conspire to put you in a place where you can do something extraordinary. And this was one of those times. And we looked at that to begin with. We were thinking, what? You know, he said, what? And it went from there to the friendship flight itself. And as Meade says, the relationship between Dixie Belcher, who was supposed to be here, and Gennady Gerasimov could have been the most important link. Because Gerasimov's active leadership here established a certain amount of believability for the whole thing. And it came together through the work of a whole lot of people, but two of the people who are and I know one's not here, who were very important in this were Bruce Kennedy, who was the chairman of Alaska Airlines at the time, the late Bruce Kennedy, and Lee Wareham. And I don't know if Lee's here or not. I guess he's not. But Lee Wareham with Alaskom really did a job here. You know, before the Alaska Airlines airplane got to fly over there, Lee had to go over there and set up some way to televise all of this stuff. Otherwise, nobody would have known about it. What would they care? it was a lot more trouble than you might think. There was an event that took place after the flight, and it had to do with Governor Kobetz from Magadan, and he and I were supposed to fly to an international dateline, you know, and land on the ice and sign some kind of proclamation that, of course, neither one of us had read. And Wareham had to go out there. This is on the Bering Sea, mind you, you know, and it's moving around. And you know, he's out there, and he set up a dish because, you know, you can't have an event without a satellite dish, or you couldn't then. And so the weather got, Governor Kobetz and the Russian contingent, they landed all right, and they, you know, they got out and wondered what was happening. And Lee had set up the dish, and we were waiting and you could see the weather. Hey, I mean, Lee had set up the dish, and Lee, after a while, it got worse and worse, and Lee's standing up there trying to talk to us, and you could only see half of him, and the other half was snow that had piled up against him coming sideways, you know, and we thought, well, we ain't doing this, and we made some excuses and everything, and in the meantime, some Russian journalists had arrived and gotten on Kobetz's airplane, and they were going to cover it for Pravda or some, you know, functional equivalent. And before Kobetz could get his airplane cranked up again to get out of there, the two reporters from Moscow had defected to Little Diomede. And you know, you could see those guys, you know, off in the Lee, you know, move the camera, and they're climbing up on that rock, you know, and there's snow coming down after them. You couldn't tell whether they were going to blow off the rock, you know, and never be seen again. But things like that went on, and not many people knew about it, but it probably made it more fun. There were a lot of follow-up visits, and my view of things is that there is a certain amount of truth in the name here. It was a friendship flight. It was called the friendship flight. And in the end, the most important part of it was establishing the friendship between the people of the Soviet Union and the people in Alaska/USA. And in the end, that was the most important piece of it. There was a lot of talk, you know, about we're going to make some money out of this deal and everything. But you know what? A little of that happened. But the truth is, most of this was social and cultural, because people in the Russian Arctic and people in the U.S. Arctic, which is us, discovered we had a lot more in common with each other than we did with Moscow and Washington, especially Washington. and where it goes from here is going to rely on opportunists on both sides. There is still that very close feeling with the Russian Far East. I can tell you that. I was in Vladivostok about 5-6 weeks ago, and they still remember that event especially, and what followed for about 10 years until the collapse of the ruble. So it's time for me to quit.
Steve, we'll have time for questions. So Willie, what are your memories of the trip?
I forgot. No. Well,
Willie Hensley never forgets anything. Now, come on.
No way. I was just thanking the governor for appointing me to the Senate for the second time. And actually, this is really wonderful, and I really appreciate the fact that there's a lot of students here and many old friends from many years past. And you know, the friendship flight is, I can't believe it's 25 years already. But needless to say, the traffic across the Bering Straits has gone on for thousands of years. For Russia, of course, Bering attempted to prove that they were separate continents, I think in, what was it, 25 or something. And he failed because he never stepped on our side. Of course, they could have just asked us. We could have told them they were separate, you know. But then they, of course, the Russians finally discovered the Great Land almost in Seattle instead of up there where we're practically touching each other. But nevertheless, you know, in that part of Alaska, that the Russian Far East was the source of where our people came in ancient times. And there was a tremendous amount of traffic in terms of trade back and forth historically. And once the Russians began their incursions into what we call Siberia, of course, they brought all the good stuff with them. You know, the kind of stuff we really wanted, you know, the pots and pans, coffee, kufie, chai, you know, cloth, needles, knives, all those things were, and the Chukchi guarded that trade jealously, and they fought hard to keep the trade because they, I'm sure they were getting good profits by trading with the Alaskans. And I read at one point that that empty island off of Nome there called Sledge Island actually used to be a place where the agents of the Chukchi lived, and there was trade that took place all the 1,000 miles from Icy Cape down to the Bristol Bay area of European goods. And so that was an area of tremendous amount of activity trade-wise and socially. And in fact, in Kotzebue, just across at Sisolik, it was also a tremendous trade area where people would come annually from the north, you know, from the east, from the interior, from the south, and also from the Russian side in the old whaling days. So there was a tremendous amount of activity there. And when I was a boy, of course, this is during the cold, just after the war and during the Cold War years, we always knew there was a Russia there, but it was like the other side of the moon. You know it was there, but you never saw it. And then of course, we'd have shortwave radios, and we'd be listening to Govorit Moskva, you know, the radio station, you know. And it was propaganda time, and, you know, they'd talk about all kinds of stuff. But really, it was an area that, to us, had a lot of curiosity. But for the people in St. Lawrence Island, it was sort of a place of some fear. Because during the war years, they'd have to, you know, cover up their windows and stuff, and there'd be talk about maybe spies coming onto the island. But needless to say, their relatives were right, you know, there. I mean, they could virtually see them, but for 50 years, there was no contact. And so I think one of the great humanitarian aspects of the thawing of the ice curtain was the fact that people could then go visit their families. And in fact, Tim Gallagher was on that flight. He and his wife, Anna, were there. And he was able to visit New Chaplino, where their people were, and where they were finally able to make contact after a half a century of being prevented from visiting with their families. And so that was a great occasion. And I talked to Jenny Aloha, who took some students over there subsequently. And she said it was amazing because while they might have been separated for 50 years, it didn't take hardly an instant for them to make sort of family contact, so to speak, and cultural contact, and brought Capri Sun and bubble gum and all kinds of nasty stuff, you know, to the children over there. So that was one of the great results of that visit. Providenia, where we landed, I mean, it was amazing. We barely had time to drink a cup of coffee before all of a sudden we were coming down and craning our necks to see this land right there that we had known was there but had never seen. And in fact, Lee Worm sent me a picture of the first sight of the mountains that we saw. And Providenia had been the location from which the first 19 reindeer came to Alaska from the Chukchi there back at the turn of the century. And it really was a giant change in our world, economically speaking, because you know, they grew from 19 to about 600,000 over a period of some decades, and sort of changed was an alternative food supply and economic activity for our people. So it was a great visit. But actually, that trip for me was my third trip because I went to Leningrad and Moscow as a college student when I was at George Washington University and was learning the language. I had taken my first year in Fairbanks and then my second year at George Washington. And so that was a very fascinating trip. Of course, it was during the communist era, and had the chance to live with a family in Poland when they were under that system. And then 12 years later, seems like things came in 12-year segments. I went back in the late 70s on a reindeer trip to Yakutia, Yakutsk, because by that time, Nana was in the reindeer business, and we knew that there were millions of reindeer over there, and they had lots of experience, and you know that's where the business originated, and so that was a fascinating trip too. Colder than hell in November, but you still saw vestiges of the old prison in Yakutsk. You know, the tower, or at least a couple of the towers were still up, and they're very fascinating. They were tremendous woodworkers. I mean, they had humongous logs, and those homes were, those old type homes were, I would give anything to have gone inside to take a look to see what's in there. But of course, there's lots of permafrost, and some of them were heaving. But the woodwork on the windows and whatnot was very beautiful. And then the Friendship Flight came in '89, and 12 years later. Sadly, we made another trip back, and our chairman from Nana passed away at the hotel. Robert Newland died there in Providencia as we were checking into the hotel. But our interest in Nana was to see what possibilities there were in doing business in the Russian Far East. And then later on, they actually took a couple of boats, which they used to do a lot of. But they came to Kotzebue, and I wish we had the film that Chuck Green made when they showed up in their boats, and it was a giant celebration when they showed up, something that hadn't happened in God knows how long. And so people were very, very generous. I mean, it really was a people-to-people affair. They were just fascinated by our lifestyle here in Alaska, and more or less the kind of freedom we had to hunt and fish and to own guns and to own machines and airplanes and things like that, whereas over there things were sort of confined. You know, the hunters had to have permission to do this, that, and another. So that was a big difference. And Yuri Totota was the, I think, the last chairman of the executive committee of that particular region. And he came to Kotzebue and was just amazed, I think, at how different things were here. But now, of course, in terms of the future, of course, the Russians have a lot of Arctic, and they've got lots of potential. And Alaska being the only Arctic the United States has, should continue to be a big player in Arctic discussions and policy. And unfortunately, I think that the Northern Forum that, you know, you strongly supported and Governor Hickel supported, you know, was a tremendous idea. I mean, it really did allow for, you know, subnational entities to participate in sort of international activity and get to know one another and learn from one another. And fortunately, during Governor Knowles's term, he didn't like to travel as much as I did. And so I got to do a fair amount of the travel with the Northern Forum and the beginnings of the Arctic Council at that time. It's been a great experience. And I think Alaska and the United States needs to do a lot more and really put some money behind the involvement in the Arctic, because we haven't done that. You know, we um, And I will support the governor who actually does something about the Arctic. Thank you very much.
Let me just say this. As your lieutenant governor, I will admit to a bit of a conspiracy with today's program. This morning I was on the phone with a group of people, with a White House group that was reviewing the new U.S. Arctic strategy. And one of the questions that came up several times during the two-hour program was, how can we get better cooperation with the Russians who don't really want to work with us on marine safety, even though on the Barents, on the far side of Siberia and Western Siberia, Norway and Russia have a very good relationship on marine safety. And we have more and more, we have crude oil tankers going through the Bering Strait. And Steve, you were there at Exxon Valdez, and you stopped our crude oil tankers until we had an escort service for them after the spill, and made sure that we had oil spill response organizations. And so the question was asked during the program today is, what would help bring the Russians around? And the answer was people-to-people relations could help with that. It's important for us for many different things that I would say are maybe touch points with us between us and the Russians today to have good people-to-people relations, whether it's getting good data from their fishing guys. And I, you know, Steve, you and Gunnar with Shauneen Conover went over after this flight to really give us the best picture of what's happening in their fishing industry. And we fish from the same waters, and we really do need to understand much better. We just hosted a meeting of a consultative council with the Russians where they said, well, this year we're not going to tell you there's zero bycatch of salmon. We'll tell you there's some, and maybe we can get around to telling you how much a little bit later on. We've got the issues on safe shipping. We've got oil, gas, and mining, where not only do we have our work in the Chukchi, where I hope Shell is able to drill next summer, but the Russians are talking about doing exploration in the Chukchi as well. And the Russian ambassador invited me to breakfast in February to say, what can we do to get Alaska companies involved with us as we do that? So I would just argue that 25 years after opening this border, we've got $10 million a year in trade between Alaska and Russia. That's about the same amount we have with Mexico. We're much closer, and there's really a lot more we should be doing.
Well, you know, you're well aware of this, that when the Northern Forum was probably at the peak of its operation, and Governor Hickel had a lot to do with this, too. What it was a group of subnational governments, basically states by another name, who had a common interest in the Arctic, and it covered the entire Arctic. It was Canada, it was Scandinavia. The Japanese and the Chinese came in basically representing, and there were 10 regional governments from Russia in this. And there came a time when the Arctic Council, this is the national governments trying to control everything, right? I don't have to be, you know, nice about this. And the Northern Forum went to them and said, look, let us have a right to attend the meetings and to comment. And they said, no. You can't possibly know as much as we do. And so the people who actually worked together, you know, across the borders were shut out of whatever conversations came later. And Tony Pennicott, who used to be the governor of the Yukon Territory back in the day, is teaching at University of Washington right now, and he called me up, and he's teaching about basically the history of the Arctic and that sort of thing. And this was one of the things that he said was possibly the worst decision, you know, made by Moscow and the United States and the, you know, the fisheries, Bering Sea fisheries deal that was actually John Tohatsky and Shauneen and myself. And it was all about pollock, you know. And the pollock, you know, the larva drifted over there, and they sat over an upwelling, and they got bigger. And just before they got big enough to spawn, they went back to the U.S. And so the Russians were catching the little ones, you know. And we went over there and said, "Why are you catching the little ones?" And he said, "Because you got all the big ones." And so we called together in Yuzhno-Sakhalinsk was part of it, and also up at Kamchatka. But we basically had the meetings in Vladivostok, and we brought in all the people who we needed to come to an agreement about how to manage the Bering Sea, which incidentally is in the joint EEZs of Russia and the United States, except a little place called the Donut Hole, which was immediately set upon by, you know, the Poles and the Taiwanese. And nobody's seen a fish in there for about 12 years, you know.
Now, we did get that under management all the time.
Yeah, after the fish were gone, you got it. And Noah took this report that we gave. And, of course, Tuhosky sat there and listened, and the Russians didn't know that he was fluent in Russian, you know. So we could tell actually what was being said and not what the Russian translator said was being said. You have to be tricky, you know, to get anything done. But and we took it to the State Department, and they said, "We don't care about fish. Don't come to us about fish, you know," and just blah. And so there it went. That was an opportunity gone.
Well, let's see if we can use this anniversary to get some more opportunities to happen. That's all I have to say. I'd like to open this panel up for questions. Is there a roving mic? Anybody like to ask a question? John Ng, you've got your hand up.
Thank you. It's refreshing, Governor, to have a politician admit he signed something without actually reading it. I only hope national politicians don't sign some major legislation before they read it. But you've alluded to what really helps our friendships in this whole relationship with Russia. What impediments are there right now? I mean, you've mentioned the economy. The bureaucracy, or is there something else, or the combination of all those, that are really impediments to furthering our relationship? And are we doing it here in Alaska, or are we going there and doing most of the relationship?
Well, you know, this relationship was active until 1998, when the ruble collapsed. And then, because of the ruble collapse, Alaska Airlines had to quit flying over there, because they didn't have enough revenue to justify the flights. And things were in chaos in 1998 over there. And the second thing was, once Alaska Airlines left town, didn't fly to Russia anymore, well, then the Russian regional carriers, they didn't go to Alaska. They went to San Francisco and Los Angeles and Seattle. So that was one thing. There was a gap in there that never was filled, and people have to be active. You know, people have got to think of things that are going to work, and you've got to have somebody over on that side that you can deal with. And it just never happened. You know, it was too difficult to get anything done at that time, and like him or not, Putin got some discipline back in that system. And since then, we just haven't, Alaska, sometimes I have to tell people that since I've been sitting in Texas for 12 years, we have to be active and imaginative and get with the program. As to Russia, and particularly with the Far East, with which we were quite familiar for that period of time, the center, meaning I was going to say Moscow, but actually Putin would be the right answer, they've rediscovered the Far East, all right, but the people who are going to benefit from the oil and gas productions in the Far East are not entrepreneurs, are not people on the Pacific side of their coast. It's the center. If you sit on the coast, the northern coast of Hokkaido in Japan, right, the Big Island, you can see Sakhalin Island. I mean, it's you know,
that close.
It's, and so the logic of all of it, isn't it? I mean, if there is logic that in politics at all, I mean, nothing I could say about it. You'd build a pipeline, wouldn't you? From Sakhalin right on into Hokkaido and into Honshu. But they are not going to do it because the Russians do have a history of being suspicious, and they really want to control that gas. And so they offer huge prices that Japanese won't pay. So that is to say that the Far East now, even though it's a lot better off than it was in our day, is still under the control of Moscow. And it will be until the Russians make a decision to give the regional governments a lot more power than they've got today.
Any other questions?
Yeah, Mr. Treadwell, I think you said that we had the same amount of trade with the Soviet Union as we have with Mexico. And I thought you said $2 million. If you could just elaborate on
that. Yeah, no, if I said the Soviet Union, I meant Russia. But the Alaska-Russia Federation trade by our trade statistics is about $10 million a year, which is just about the same number as it is with Mexico. And put that in the context of about $5 billion a year of exports from the United States. And Greg Wolf is here. Greg, if the numbers are wrong, let us know. But the interesting thing is this, is that we do share in several of the same pots. You know, the value of Arctic fisheries is about $2.5 billion. Alaska takes a whole lot of that bigger pollock that Governor Cooper was talking about. The Russians do too. We've got a bit of a dispute with the Russians because we'll agree on how much crab is to be caught, and more than we agree they're going to catch ends up with a Russian label on it in American stores. So there's still some questions of control of those issues that end up to be friction points in our fisheries negotiations. In terms of tourism and oil and gas and exchange of services, there hasn't been as much as we might have looked at. We saw that we could supply the Russian Far East with groceries cheaper, even with their tariffs, than out of Seattle and Alaska than they could out of Europe. But they chose Europe. So they've chosen a higher cost structure. I remember at one point the late Dale Lindsay's firm was selling oil in Providenia, and the Russian suppliers from Europe said, no, we want to keep that cash in Russia. So there's been fits and starts. And sometimes organized crime has been involved. It's been difficult. There's many people probably in this room who can tell some stories of people, you know, keeping trade from happening. But I still think there's opportunity.
Tourism was mentioned. Tourism was mentioned, and there used to be some tourism in the Far East around Providenia and so on in the early 90s. I'm wondering if that's something that could be maybe revived if it's not going on. And that could possibly help the local people as opposed to the main government or Putin or whoever.
Willie, do you want to take that?
Thank you. Actually, when we were visiting over there back then, that was one of our ideas because, you know, we had built a hotel in Kotzebue. We had fostered tourism, and we had quite a number of people coming from Taiwan, you know, so we were interested. So we did take a look at the prospects over there. We went to the hot springs at Lorna there, which to us maybe had some possibilities. But we, you know, like you said, there was sort of the security of our investment over there that we were concerned about. And we also, they also have the same problems that we do here in the sense that, you know, it's thinly populated, it's far from the marketplace, it's high cost, you know, not exactly a breadbasket. So there are challenges, you know, of doing business there. And because, you know, hell, bringing people to Kotzebue is expensive from the lower 48, you know. And so, but we were quite, in fact, there was an effort to make an investment there, but it kind of frittered. I think your description of, you know, the center always has been wherever the czar was, you know, and whatever was out there, you know, made sure that revenue went back to the power centers, and I don't think that has changed much. You know, that really is the big challenge of people in the various regions and that live there and with production. There's a great deal of the value that goes, you know, back to the power centers and not much back out to the hinterlands.
Just in terms of tourism, I remember taking one trip to Magadan on a delegation you led, Governor Cooper, where we got a chance to go through a gulag that had just basically been emptied. And so there's still some very interesting historical tourism, some very interesting cultural tourism, some very interesting natural places. I took two expeditions in 1990 to Wrangell Island, and then we also took a Russian helicopter, mapped the entire coast, and brought close to 5,000 American tourists to the Russian Far East in the early 90s before the Russians decided they were less interested, and Claire, you were part of that. But the point being is, I think there is an opportunity. There's places like Whale Alley and Arakamchichan Island and some amazing archaeological sites that kind of pair up with our side of the Bering Strait. And when I mentioned my formal remarks that I'm proud of what the National Park Service Beringia Program has done to keep the door open, they've done a very good job to help kind of catalog what are the resources on both sides that are cultural that need to be understood. So, you know, if you find the right operator, and we had an Alaskan operator, Chuck West's tour operation that was in there, and they ended up going out of business. But there are other opportunities, I think, to see ship-based tourism work ultimately. And Nome, for a time, accepted rubles in their taxi cabs. Margie.
Yes, on the first Alaska Airlines flight to Sakhalin, and then again on the last one after it digested some pavement on the runway, we relied on a very beautiful young Russian skier who was our interpreter. And I'm delighted to say that young lady made her way to Alaska, graduated at UAA, and is now a respected member of our community. And not only that, she brought her mother over, and also her niece, who just graduated with honors for UAA. So this would be young Rada, who was a member of the Russian Olympic ski team. She just represented Alaska in some national ski meets, and works at an engineering firm. So those individual friendships, the friendships, as Governor Cooper and Willie pointed out, that's where it's all about.
Well, and just to that point, anybody here who's a product of either a Russian-American marriage that happened after opening that border, an adoption, I know a father of at least one daughter from Yakutsk who's here, stand up, raise your hands. I mean, this has been significant, mm-hmm. incredibly significant in the family lives of thousands of people. And Margie Johnson, thank you for pointing that out. Margie, by the way, was on the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce board and chaired the commerce after the chamber after Dave Heatwall, and we had the Siberian Gateway Project, which was the business group that work to help Governor Cooper open the border. Radha, you're on.
Okay. Test? Okay, sorry. And Margie was just named Alaskan of the Year just recently. But I wanted to ask sort of an uplifting question. I'm an eternal optimist. So something that Lieutenant Governor Treadwell mentioned that just piqued my interest, and that is that the Russian oil and gas corporations are now getting leases in the Chukchi Sea and are going to be doing exploration work there. And they're looking for expertise from the Alaskan companies that have oil field support and other expertise in the Arctic working successfully, such as NANA itself, as an opportunity to bring those contractors to assist the now established and you know, sort of wealthy oil companies on the Russian side to do those opportunities together between Alaskan companies and the Russian companies. I see that as a huge opportunity for Alaskan to bring those trade numbers up.
Steve or Willie, would you like to comment, Governor?
Well, I think is this on? Okay. Well, we're sort of in the early stages of this offshore effort, despite all these many years that we've been discussing it. I mean, some of you remember the leases that were let out in Bristol Bay many years ago that had to be kind of taken back because of the fisheries issue. And so it's anybody's guess, you know, what the future is offshore. But clearly, at least on the Russian side, there's a tremendous reserves, presumably. And I suspect that there's going to be, as they develop their technologies to do work in that part of the world, I think will be opportunities. The one thing I wanted to mention that I forgot to was that trip to Providenia and the subsequent trip we took with Ted Mala on the ship that went from Nome to Providenia actually spawned quite a great deal of contact, particularly between the North Slope Borough and the Russians. And the research that they were able to do on the whales, you know, helped the Alaskan side a great deal in justifying the numbers, the whaling numbers to the International Whaling Commission. So that was a strong connection that was developed between the North Slope Borough and the Russian Far East.
Go ahead, Governor.
In there, you know, for quite some period of time, there were a fair number of Alaskans working in Sakhalin. Originally through VECO, and whether CH2M Hill is still doing that, I don't know. But that was one avenue there that was accepted by the Russians. And whether they have continued to allow American oil field service companies in there, I mean, they're not hiring them, of course. Exxon and them are bringing them in. But that would be interesting. An interesting precedent for working together in the Chukchi Sea, the Russians have kind of, as you know, have kind of changed their mind about things that they originally were going to do, and it becomes harder to get through. To, for instance, have U.S. people working on Russian rigs, and vice versa, and I personally I think if you're working over there, if you've got a lease that you're working in another country, you ought to be able to bring in anybody you want to, you know, unless they're bombers or something, but a lot of it has to do with the attitudes of Moscow.
We've got time for just two more questions. Got one there, and actually, I think we could
Well, thank you, Kari. Yep, the conversation this afternoon has alluded to a lot of unfinished business with Russia, fisheries management, species data, mapping, transport, oil spill response. I'm curious what the panel thinks what the best avenues for addressing those issues is going forward. Is it something like the Friendship Flight, which is just a bilateral arrangement, or is it a forum that's broader like the Arctic Council or something other than those options?
Real fast, Steve.
No, don't do it like the Arctic Council, whatever you do. You just got to find somebody over there, and preferably some institution that's got a common interest with you. And it'll take a lot longer than you think. But you've got to get on with it, really. Detail matters in these things.
And I would just say an example to look at is the Barents Council, where they had mayors, governors, and foreign ministers working together. The Norwegians hammered out their border with Russia, hammered out better fishing agreements with Russia, have much better fishing, and, you know, the grass is always greener. But I think there's something that we can learn from that cooperation at that end of the Arctic.
I think if we had a governor, a strong governor, who would have a great interest in reestablishing ties with Russia, who has good connections with the business community, and who might get our own president of our own country to kind of patch things up with the Russians, I think then you'd have something to work with.
Francine next, and we have a lot of student questions, but, oh, you got one? All right, go ahead.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
My name is Sharon Lehow. I am here with my father, Chet Wilukowicz, who was a passenger on the Friendship Flight. And Lieutenant Governor, we want to thank you and your staff for taking the time to compile all the stories from the folks who were on that incredible flight. And as a token of our appreciation on behalf of my father, I'd like to present some original artwork from John Van Zyl. This artwork was on the commemorative covers that were taken on the flight and carried by my father. And thank you to you and your staff and your service to Alaska.
Thank you. Signed by Governor Steve Cooper and Willie Hensley and Al Adams and Frank Murkowski and Wally Hickel and John Van Zyl. John,
wow.
Why don't you...
That's awesome.
Wait, that's wonderful, and thank you for that project.
Well, this hour has just flown by. I'm sorry we have to cut this off. I know some school buses need to hurry back. I want to thank everybody for coming. And our next program is on the 22nd with Jay Butler, who will be talking about healthcare. Is it a personal, social, or individual issue? So I hope to see everyone on the 22nd. And if you'd like to help us by recycling your name tags, please drop them off at the front table on your way out. Thank you very much.